This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 20th of March, 2022. Very interesting backdrop here for global markets where we have these U.S. Treasury yields on the rise and continuing to rise sharply, an incredible move on Friday, even a further acceleration overnight. We have the 5 to 30 year part of the yield curve inverting. We'll get to that in a moment, but just this amazing turning of the screws, if you will, on yields ahead of this May 4th FOMC meeting, which we suspect will, we're going to get a clearer message on the timing and size of the quantitative tightening. But the remarkable thing has to be the scale of the market advance in equities as well. And even on Friday, managing to close up despite this incredibly steep rise in yields, Peter. I'm at this point, I'm kind of shaking my head here. We all know that at some point, these brutal rises in yields will stem the market advance. It's mechanical throughout history that this happens. But of course, we don't know what the timing is. But what's your take on what's going on here?
No, we talked about it endlessly on the podcast last week, and I'm as baffled as you are, John, and I don't know what the explanation to put on it. It is quite remarkable. I think it seems like the market for now is interpreting this as the high interest rates. It's really reflecting a strong underlying economic growth rate in the U.S. and that's for now is offsetting. The rise in interest rates, because we have talked about interest rate sensitivity, and that's obviously a very critical theme if you're in a low growth environment, because then really high interest rate is very bad. But if it comes with higher growth, which the market believes right now, then it can be offset, and that's basically what we're seeing. Where the breaking point is, I don't know. The S&P 500 futures on slide two, we closed just around the 100-day moving average. That level, not precisely, but around that level was twice the resistance level back in February. So let's see where things go. There's still a lot of momentum. And talking about momentum and then also lack of, if you look at the theme baskets for the months to date, I think it really reflects what's going on in the market. So defense is doing the best. Crypto is doing well. The commodity sector is doing very well together with the financial trading. And then in the bottom, you still have bubble stocks, e-commerce, despite the recent rebound, horrible months still. And then China consumer and technology basket down 15%. And I think that's a good segue into the slide three, because we have this northbound connect, which allows foreign investors to invest into the mainland, what's so-called the A-shares market in China. And that has been open for a couple of years. And we've now seen the biggest outflow, foreign outflow of Chinese equities through this northbound connection on record, as you can see here. And this is in nominal terms, so that's the yuan. But if you sort of scale it with the market value of the exchange or the mainland share market at these different points, I'm pretty sure that in percentage terms, it's by far the biggest outflow. So I think that spills into all the whole geopolitical risk, the war in Ukraine, but it's also the COVID, the zero COVID stance. Shanghai went in a partial lockdown today. We have the Shenzhen region and all of these things. It's just adding up. And we'll talk a little bit more about China when we get to the earnings release calendar.
All right. And speaking of the yield advances, we now have much more significant portions of the U.S. yield curve inverting. And in fact, if you take the entire 5 to 30 yield spread, it has inverted. And put that on slide four. This often leads to twos, tens, which is the sort of the classic part of the yield curve that is tracked for inversion and signaling an eventual recession. We're not far away there, only plus 13 basis points, but you can see that it inverted this 5 to 30. It hasn't done so since back in early 2016, when it only did so very briefly. Of course, yes, it signals recession eventually or historically, but that eventually can come with quite a lag. So it'll be very interesting to see what the scale of the countdown is to a recession and to what degree we've had, very mysterious or not mysterious, but rather all the interference and the weight of the central bank and its QE, to what degree that has distorted yield signals in the first place. So whether this all these patterns hold according to their historical sort of rhyming with historical experience. So in other words, we inverted back in early 2006. We were getting into recession basically in late 2007. Just a general idea of the time scale, at least for that time. And you're seeing this actually expressed quite interestingly in the more short-term market as well, also in the US, but I pulled out the UK there on the right there on slide four, showing what the market is predicting the one-year yield will be at various points in time. So if you go out 6 months, it's predicting that one-year UK yield to rise towards 2.5% plus. 1 year out, 1 year forward from here, 2.75. But then look at 2 years out, expected to drop back 50 basis points. In other words, the market predicting that we're going to peak, this cycle is going to peak out sometime, let's call it around a year from now, and begin falling very steeply thereafter as central banks will be cutting rates, apparently, and we'll be in a very different environment, supposedly a very low growth to even recession. I would argue if you're looking at those yields to spell out what the future holds. So very interesting attention in the market. You're not seeing, or you're seeing a lot of moving parts here. And, you know, confidence surveys look absolutely horrible in the UK, parts of the US or some of the US surveys as well. But you still look at housing, which is in a raging bull market there. Some of the business surveys, very strong. That services survey in the UK last week at a 60 plus. So these things take time in any case. But let's shift gears a little bit here. And of course, one of the things holding back real growth have been energy prices and the prospect for these to stay high. They're down quite a bit. I suppose, Ola, a lot of this has to do with hopes on the Ukraine war front, where we're seeing a little bit more noise on a shift in the Russian focus, potentially towards claiming parts of the sort of the status quo, maybe plus a little bit in the eastern part of Ukraine, rather than trying to do the full overtaking of the country. There seems to be a bit more noise on the peace front, if not on the actual reality on the ground. Is this, to your mind, what's impacting oil prices here the most?
It's most certainly a key part of that, John. I think what we probably have to remind ourselves is that even if we do have a peace deal tomorrow, the West would probably regard Putin and the government as still as very toxic, and the question is whether that's we're going to see any recovery in normal flows anytime soon, even if we should get a deal. But the market is reacting with some relief to that, but also I think the focus, Peter mentioned China with the virus lockdowns, which is now spread to Shanghai. That's also attracting some headlines this morning with it, China being a major importer of crude oil and a key source of demand. So that's also helping to just ease some of the price tensions in the market. But the growth outlook, I think, is one that we will need to focus on over the coming weeks and months, because one thing is the market is very tight. Another thing is that we are starting to see some of these very high prices impacting demand. I think right now the epicenter of that is in Europe, being the hardest hit, where we see this surge in gas and electricity prices currently up by a factor of 5 or 6 versus where we were a year ago. I put in on slide 7, you see the we're seeing a slowdown in starting to see a slowdown in shipping rates, especially on the route from Shanghai to Europe, to Rotterdam, and it's now down 24% from the recent peak. So it could indicate that we are starting to see a slowdown in Europe, not only from industries being hurt, but also by consumers starting to be a little bit more cautious, considering how the kind of gas and electricity bills they're receiving right now.
All right, and then elsewhere in commodities, you've got quite an overview here on slide 8. Where are we supposed to focus from here? The food story, fortunately, seems to be quieting down a bit. We're elevated, but it's gone kind of sideways. I guess that we have to wait to see how that planting season progresses.
Indeed, and we got this key report from the U.S. Later this week, on Wednesday, I believe it is, the planting perspective for U.S. farmers this coming spring. That will give us a good idea about what the outlook will be for the key crops. But I think the key one I'm just focusing on here, and that's also the one that's creating a lot of turmoil in the market, that's basically volatility. You've seen the 30-day volatility using some of the Bloomberg commodity indices remains very elevated. We haven't really seen any kind of relaxation there yet. And some of the extreme volatility this past month has been driven by by companies by being exposed to margin calls and having to reduce risk, and then that's just led to lower volumes, and with lower volumes and uncertainty, then you continue to see high volatility. So it's just to indicate that we've seen broad gains with a few exceptions, but the key for now is really to keep an eye on volatility. We can start to see that come down and start to see some of these markets start to normalize a little bit, and so far we're not seeing it.
Yeah, and then one of the key markets, obviously, for input prices is that LNG or the natural gas market. And I'll have a segue back into currencies on that. But you have some overview here on slide 9 with LNG, and LNG has suddenly become an incredibly pivotal market here for in the wake of these cinching off of so much of the Russian supply into Europe.
Yeah, indeed. The market is resting. It's putting its hopes now on increased LNG shipments over the coming months to alleviate some of the pressures that we otherwise would see with the lack of flows or lack of pickup in flows from Russia. Excuse me. I think the key there on the slide here, slide 9, is first of all, the gas storage situation in Europe is obviously quite improving quite a bit. You can see we are starting to turn. We may have even seen the low point in terms of stock levels. That's ahead of what we normally see. And that's due to very warm weather, actually, across Europe. It's mild in Copenhagen, it's mild across Europe. And also the prospect for rising LNG import. I would, however, still be bit cautious about the outlook, because if you look at the gas prices for the coming two winters, we haven't really seen any reduction there yet. So gas for next winter is still trading close to 100 euros, and the following winter is still around 60, still levels that would be too high for comfort for many many consumers of gas. So we're not out of the woods, but at least we're seeing the situation start to be a bit more stable.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, it'll be interesting, I think, as we go along, very interesting to see these U.S. commitments to do LNG into Europe, with that raises the domestic prices quite badly, maybe next winter season or whatever, or if the U.S. can scale up that production. But that's an interesting one. The other interesting thing is the odd situation where you have Australia just sitting with all of the cards in the hole here. It is the world's largest LNG exporter, believe it or not. It hardly needs to use the stuff for heating, not a lot of heating requirements in Australia. And I think that story is very interesting in Asia, as we have, you know, Australia as the large exporter of commodities, whether it's the traditional industrial commodities angle into China, now with the LNG and the wheat exports that are so key and sort of connected with the Ukraine war story. And then we have this rising yield story affecting the Japanese yen on the negative side. So Aussie yen has absolutely exploded higher, something like 15% off the lows from January. That is a scale of move that is just very rare in the G10 space. We can't help but remind folks, this is the end of quarter, end of year. We talked about this end of financial year, in Japan, here on Thursday, March 31st. There's been a big pivot last year in the yen, in global yields as well, right on that date. I'm not saying we're going to get a repeat of that, but we have talked about considerably so last week that there could be a risk of some significant portfolio rebalancing due to the absolutely terrible quarter for bonds here, which would require some mechanical rebalancing, at least if you're to maintain the exposures according to principles of a relative exposure across assets. So remarkable to watch here. We had the Bank of Japan out overnight with its second operation with unlimited defense, so-called, of that 0.25% yield cap on the 10-year JGB. It actually traded very slightly above that yield overnight, which means that as global yields go higher elsewhere, the pressure transmits into the currency, the Japanese currency, rather than into the Japanese government bond market, which the Bank of Japan protects. So you can see that that remarkable advance there in dollar yen on slide 6. And again, noting that Aussie yen has been even rising at a more rapid pace because the Aussie is strong also for other reasons. Meanwhile, the very loud quietness, if you will, in the renminbi, the Chinese renminbi is very noticeable. And this, I wrote about this on Friday, the scale of relative strength of renminbi versus Japanese yen weakness is on a level that we haven't seen since that 2015 revaluation of the yuan lower, because it was becoming so painful for China to attract the very strong dollar at the time. It was very inappropriate for what was going on in the backgrounds. This time around, I think there's less willingness to devalue or at least adjust the value lower because of China's commodity import bill. So, but still, lots of tension building there, and very interested to see how this all shakes out. Also, with that very interesting calendar date coming into view, March 31st on Thursday. Peter, if you haven't fallen asleep listening to us jawbone on commodities, yields, and rates, we still have a lot of stuff going on in the equity market. What are the things you're looking at and focusing on this week?
So if we start with our stocks to watch in today's session, I've highlighted Ørsted as the top one. So one of the big Danish business newspapers, JP, or Jyllandsposten as it's called in Denmark, had got their hands on some internal documents showing that Ørsted is contemplating expanding their share capital by 20%, with the Danish government already have backed the move and will, of course, move in pro rata to defend their 50.1% stake in the company. And you probably know, it was part of, I think, last year's information that Ørsted has one of the most aggressive investment plans in renewable energy space in Europe of all companies. I think over the next 8 or 9 years, they plan to spend, if I remember correctly, around 350 billion Danish kroner. So it's a lot of capital, and I think the capital needs haven't gone down since this war in Russia. I see this move as, you know, part of it. Okay, we have all these plans. We planned them for 2028 or 2030. Now we're going to accelerate that, and we don't have enough retained earnings to do that. So we need to go to the market and get a lot of more capital. So that's obviously the one to watch. And also, they just sold a 50% stake this morning in their Hornsea 2 wind farm, and they got £3 billion pounds for that 50% stake there. So there's lots to chew on there if you're invested in Ørsted or in renewable space. Dessau Aviation is part of our defense basket. I'm highlighting that because a lot of sell side analysts have been out over the past week lifting the share price. So there's a lot of attention and flow moving into this this industry. And Dessau Aviation, of course, will get its share of the increases in the pie from, of course, the French government. And then big news, the German Chancellor Scholz has said that Germany is contemplating investing in its in the missile system that Israel has been using, the Iron Dome, with great success. And there are two one. There's the Arrow 3 system, which is the one that are used in Israel, and then there is the U.S. version, the TAD system, which stands for Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. And that's basically a system you can apply on major cities to intercept any missile coming into the region. And you can see, so the Arrow 3 system is produced by Boeing, and the Lockheed Martin is the principal manufacturer of the TAD system. And I would definitely watch those two companies, because if Germany is moving on this, you could be quite sure, I think, that other countries, potentially Poland, could be moving on this, France as well. So that's a lot of contracts and a lot of money.
All right. And just for perspective, that 350 billion Danish, you mentioned, that's around between 50 and 60 billion dollars. That's a very large sum indeed. And then on the earnings front, I think you previewed a lot of this on Friday, but any focus today? I know there's a lot of Chinese names on this week's earnings calendar.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of banks. The two main U.S. names are Micron Technology tomorrow and Lululemon Athletica, two very different companies. Micron in the memory space, semiconductors industry, sector, if you will. Lululemon is in the, the personal health or orientation and trend. You know, it's, they got their claim to fame was their yoga mats, etc., and clothing, and this is a rapidly expanding brand. But I've highlighted Ganfeng Lithium because they are on Wednesday, and it's the most valuable standalone lithium miner in the world. Very aggressive targets from analysts covering the company in terms of the outlook. So the outlook for this year is for the company to double its top line and bottom line, just incredible speed and growth there, and lithium being so crucial to the electric vehicle transformation, and with lithium prices just exploding higher almost week by week. I find the Ganfeng Lithium earnings release on Wednesday particularly interesting.
Okay, we'll look for that, and let's look at the economic calendar for today and the rest of the week. As usual, Monday pretty quiet. Interesting, given that outlook I showed for the UK rates, to see what Governor Bailey is saying. A bit wily, Mr. Bailey, in his communication with the markets, to say the least, but they sounded awfully downbeat at one of the recent meetings about the prospects for the UK economy. So very interesting to see how they're seeing things now. As well, confidence and employment, very interesting this week out of the U.S. So that Conference Board Consumer Confidence Indicator, traditionally very correlated with the state of the job market, which has been wildly strong of late. And that has held largely true for this survey, but other surveys, I think, are at very low levels because of the inflation angle on things. So that tension between jobs versus inflation and our real wages actually declining is a very key angle on what's going on. And we should be a little bit the wiser through this week with that survey tomorrow. And then we have the Friday U.S. job report with non-farm payrolls change and especially the average hourly earnings. So as we watch to see if we're getting this wage price spiral development, or if that last February average hourly earnings, which was very downbeat, if that's something new to watch for, that there's a lack of ability to negotiate or see higher wages, which I think would, of course, be very bad for real growth coming down the pike. All right, there's plenty more to look at this week, and we'll, of course, take you through it one day at a time. For now, have a great day out there. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.